ओमज्ञानतिमिरान्धस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनशलाकय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपकदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकं। वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरुः श्रीयुतपदकमलं श्रीगुरुन् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातं सहगणरघुनाथान्वितं तं सजीवम् साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनसहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधाकृष्णपादां सहगणललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितांश्च। नमो ॐ विष्णुपादाय कृष्णप्रेष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदान्तस्वामिन्निति नामिने। नमस्ते सारस्वते देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेषशून्यवादी पाश्चात्यदेशतारिणे वाञ्छाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्त वृंद। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। हरे कृष्ण। I am speaking to a group of very fortunate people, more fortunate than I am, because all of you are personally serving none other than the Supreme Personality of Godhead directly in His manifestation as the Deity. As Srila Prabhupada has explained on numerous occasions in His teachings, there is no difference between the Deity and the Supreme Lord. Just as the energy of the Lord is not different from Him, and the material world is constituted of His material energy, that is also non-different from Him. Since the material elements are the energy of the Lord, it is not at all difficult to understand that Krishna can manifest Himself through these material elements. There's a very nice purport Srila Prabhupada gives in one of the verses dealing with the story of Sakshi Gopal in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And he mentions that because the material elements constitute His energy, His material energy, so He can manifest Himself through these material elements anytime He wants. He can also withdraw Himself anytime He wants. But He manifests Himself in this way, responding to the sincere call of His devotees who want to serve Him in a very personal way, in a tangible way, where they can actually experience reciprocation. So Krishna's manifestation as the deity form is an expression of His bhakta vatsalya. Bhakta vatsala, you know that Krishna is called bhakta vatsala. Vatsala means dear. So Krishna is called bhakta vatsala because He is very affectionate to His devotees. So Krishna's appearance in the form of the deity is an expression of this one very important quality of the Lord, that He loves His devotees. That the devotees are very dear to Him. And because the devotees are dear to Him, He wants to reciprocate with their loving sentiments. He wants to give them an opportunity to serve Him in a very tangible way, in the way that their senses, working senses and their knowledge acquiring senses, are all completely engaged. And then Krishna, in the form of the deity, has the opportunity to actually reciprocate. Those who are faithful actually experience the reciprocation. For those who don't have faith, they see the deity only as a statue, only as something made of matter, wood or stone or metal. But when we see with the eye of faith and devotion, then the deity doesn't remain just a statue. The deity can be realized by us as being completely non-different from Krishna. Pratima nahitume sakshat Vrajendra Nandana. As the young Brahmana in the Sakshi Gopal story tells the Lord, the deity of Gopal, "My dear Lord, you are not just a statue. You are directly the son of Nanda Maharaj in Vrindavan." Because as you know, the young Brahmana was talking to the deity. He was telling Gopal, "You have to come and give witness." And he actually almost threatened the Lord. He says, "You know, it's a principle of good moral behavior in culture, society, that if you've heard something, if you've seen something, you are a witness, and there has been some injustice, and you were witness to that, and when called upon to give witness, if you don't do that, then it's a sin." So you know that this older Brahmana has promised the hand of his daughter in marriage to me. You were witness to that. And now, it's a question of your prestige in as much as it is of his dharma and my dharma. So you better come with me and keep your promise. So these are the dealings of very advanced devotees with the Supreme Lord in the form of his deity. Because he had faith. He understood that this was directly the Supreme Lord. So when we speak of seeing Krishna, we see first through the ears. In order to appreciate that the deity is non-different from the Supreme Lord, we should very carefully hear Krishna conscious lectures. We should read Srila Prabhupada's books. We should chant the holy name sincerely and perform various other forms of devotional service and develop relationships that are very loving and trusting with the devotees and which are nourishing for our Krishna consciousness. All of this combined brings about faith in our heart, and that faith that has come in by the process of hearing and serving now gives us a different vision. And now as we see the deity, we see something different. You know, I often give this example of how when you go to a doctor and the doctor asks you to get some x-ray or some blood test or something like that, and you get the x-ray film in front of you and you can't discern a thing. It doesn't make any sense, right? Unless you're a doctor yourself. So when you look at the x-ray, it just looks like white and black blobs on the patches on the film. But when the doctor looks at it, he says, you got this problem here, you got this problem there. So both of us are looking at the same film. So has he got some extra vision? Has he got some special spectacles by which he can see something that you can't? No, his eyesight is as good or as bad as yours. But what he's doing is, he's seeing with the eye of knowledge. Because he has heard, he's been trained in medical science. He has attended lectures, he's read books. So he understands and makes sense of that little film, which doesn't make sense to us. So we see the same thing, but we see it differently, depending on what we've heard, what we've learned, who we've associated with. So in exactly the same way, when a non-devotee looks at the deity, he or she just sees a statue. But because we are devotees, as devotees, we have heard lectures, we have read books, and we perform devotional service, so we see the deity as Krishna. So the principle of faith and devotion is the first principle in serving the deities. Now, in order to do that, as I said, you have to do all the background work. You have to chant your rounds nicely. You have to hear the lectures regularly. You have to read Prabhupada's books regularly, etc. So then you will develop that faith and that devotion with which you can serve the deity. So this is the most important criterion that pleases Krishna. Yes, when it comes to creativity, artistic ability, ability to decorate the deities and sew nice clothes for him, make nice jewelry for the deities, and all of these things are wonderful, and they are also an expression of our devotion to him. Nonetheless, what Krishna is really looking for, even if you can't do all of these things in a very artistic or gorgeous way, is our faith and devotion. So if you have that when you serve him, then even if you can't manage many other gorgeous things, you just offer the devotion that you have in your heart, Krishna is extremely pleased. And your deity worship is successful. Of course, where there is devotion, you will also try to see that you can offer the best things possible to Krishna within your means. So then you will arrange for nice jewelry, nice clothing, you know, nice flowers and so on and so forth. So this is the first point. The second point is that in deity worship, there must be cleanliness, right? Cleanliness means that the altar must be really clean. Everything that is on the altar, including the deity's clothes, the deity's jewelries, the paraphernalia, must be maintained very clean. So when you keep them in different shelves or cupboards, make sure the cupboards are clean, the shelves are clean, the hangers are clean, the room is clean. Be very fastidious about the cleanliness aspect of it, because you're going to offer it to Krishna. So even the food that you eat, that you offer to Krishna, the vessels in which they are cooked and offered to Krishna, there must be cleanliness. And of course, the physical and mental cleanliness of the devotee who's serving the Lord is also important. So you must make sure you are shuchi. Shuchi means clean, not muchi. Muchi means dirty. Yes? So you should have taken your bath, you should have covered your hair, and all of that. Now the third principle, which is actually more important in a regular temple where the deities have been formally installed, is punctuality and timing. At home, there is some freedom, some license given to you to be a little flexible. You don't have to be like the temple when the conch shell has to blow. No matter what, it has to blow at 4:30 in the morning for Mangalarati. You have to give the offering of bhoga at a certain time. It has to have a certain number of items, certain types of items. There are a certain number of offerings that have to be given every day. So there's lots of rules, and those things have to be followed very punctually. At home, as I said, there is flexibility. But in the school, which is where the temple is kind of in between your home and the temple, so the standards have to be in between the two. You can't have it as strict as you have it in the temple here. And neither should it be as flexible and loose also as it is at home. Because at home you just do as per your need. Right? Some devotees are very strict, and that's, if they're able to, that's excellent. But nevertheless, in school, when you have the deities, try to maintain some regulation, try to make your own timetable which is realistic and practical. And then follow that. So these are the three most important things. What are they? Number one?
Faith and
devotion. Number two? Cleanliness. And number three? Punctuality. And I would add another word to it by saying punctuality and regularity. It's more or less similar things. So it must be done consistently. There's no kind of holiday from deity worship. You know, once the Lord is there, it's okay. I want a break, so I won't serve the deities today. Let them sleep today. No, you have to feed them. Just like when you have a child in the house, you want to say, "Well, I'm tired. I'll let the child fast today. I'm too tired." Yes, you do it. So essentially, these are the three most important principles. There's a lot to say on deity worship because it's a big topic and it's very important for us. But I think we're supposed to have questions and answers, right? So what I'll do now is, after this brief talk, I'll leave the floor open for questions, and then we can have some discussions. Not necessarily on the technical parts of the deity worship, as to what mantra should you chant here or there. That's not the point. But the principles of it, the philosophy of it, the practicalities of it, the mood, and so on. Okay? So you're all very lucky, as I said, that you get the chance to serve these deities. Please do it very nicely. Because if you keep Krishna happy there, the deities are presiding over the school, actually speaking. It's their property. They are the lords and the masters there. So keep them happy, always. And another thing is that try to maintain some etiquette in front of the deities. Try to see that there's not too much of frivolity in front of the deities. Even the children tend to be frivolous anyway, even adults do. But I think we should be trained that in front of the deities there are certain standards, certain etiquette to be followed. Those of you who are serious about it, I would suggest you read the Nectar of Devotion, that section on Seva Aparadhas. Where Seva Aparadha means the offense to the deity. So there are many such offenses that are listed in the Nectar of Devotion. Like, for example, you shouldn't get angry at someone in front of the deity. You know, when children do mischief and you say, "Don't do this," they do that. So don't get angry in front of the deities. And don't criticize anyone in front of the deities. Don't sit in front of the deities with your legs spread out. If the children do that sometimes, just gently correct them to make sure they're not showing their feet to Krishna, or they've not spread their legs out like that. We should also sit in the proper way once we're in the temple hall. There should be a certain etiquette about that. No shouting and jumping and running around and, you know, all of that. There should be some degree of gravity. At the same time, the kirtan should be enthusiastic. So whatever jumping and dancing they want to do, they should do it when there's kirtan. So then you engage all their energies in that time. So in the school, that's how you could facilitate the devotional service of the children as well as the staff. Okay. So, any questions? Yes.
So, it's my understanding that...
You came all the way from Leicester for this program?
That's right. Oh. It's my understanding that Krishna Avanti Schools Trust has set up the standards of worship different to how the standards of worship were set up within ISKCON according to the deity worship ministry. So with those differing standards, one of the things that was proposed was that children would be in a position, if they were of suitable character and nature, to begin to take up the worship of the deity of, for example, Krishna Balaram. Because the deities are residing in the school, so they worship the deity, they're the ones that are there to actually offer that service. What are your thoughts on this, Maharaj?
Okay, the question is that The Krishna Avanti Trust has evolved certain standards of deity worship which are a little different from the deity worship ministry of ISKCON. Yes, as I mentioned, in the schools, the standard of worship that you can expect or you could have are those in between that at home and in the ISKCON temples. It's something in between. Neither should it be so loose and flexible like at home, where basically you have so much freedom, not that much, but quite a bit of flexibility. It can't be as strict as it is in the temples. So the idea of engaging the children in the schools to worship the deities is a good idea. I think it's fine. Even if it's Krishna Balaram, I think it's okay. Generally, for Krishna and Radharani, the standards are a little stricter. But I think that not that many would object strongly if you had children serving Krishna Balaram as well, considering the larger picture of how it, you know, inculcates the spirit of devotional service in the children and looking at all of that. Personally, I would feel it's a good idea, looking at the pros and cons of it all together. But still, that said, the children who worship the deities must be trained. Trained in not only the technicalities of the worship, but also in the attitudes and the standards of cleanliness and behavior and other things. So we shouldn't think that just because they're children worshipping the deities, we should just let them do whatever they like. No, we should have some standards. And only those children who conform to those standards should be allowed to go on. So that would be my suggestion. In this way, they will get an opportunity to serve the deities, and this will be with them for the rest of their life. And they will also understand that it's not something just so cheap. You know, so don't make it very so strict that it's out of bounds for children, basically. So you make it so strict that they just can't do it. At the same time, there should be some standard. Any other questions? Yes. You have more of a quota of questions because you came all the way from Leicester, so.
Thank you. Sometimes, because of the nature of the deities being installed, then sometimes the wider community are critical of devotees engaging children. So let's say we identify children that can follow strictly, and that they have some qualification for serving the deity. Sometimes the wider society risk on them could be critical to say Prabhupada's instructions on deity worship were that children not under the age of 10 should not be involved. But furthermore, because those deities have been installed, then actually only Brahmins should be serving. Now, how can we balance the need for the school to sustain the worship of the deities for the children with the perspective that Brahmins should be doing the worship of installed deities? Is there a kind of a difference?
Yes. I mean, I would suggest that children who are very small shouldn't be doing it, you know, because they don't have the capacity to understand the seriousness of it. They can be engaged with their own small deities at home and things like that. But yes, I agree, they should be children who are a little grown up, so that the younger kids also aspire, when I grow up, I also want to do that. You know, so they should be a little older in age, so they understand what it is that they are doing. Yes, as I said, there are pros and there are cons. And strictly speaking, to worship the deities, you need to be second initiated. But many of our devotees, even at homes, have their deities, and they're not even initiated, many of them, and they worship the deities. As far as the Pran Pratishtha, the official installation of the deities, is concerned, Yes, definitely that makes it more serious. But one time Jananivas Prabhu was explaining that time is also a form of installation. Meaning that if you worshipped a particular set of deities for a long time, even though they haven't been formally installed, it's as good as being installed, because you worship them consistently over a certain period of time. So yes, there will be, there is merit in what they object. I mean, the objections are valid. And but as I said, you know, just looking at the pros and cons, and there should be a grown-up devotee with them all the time doing, and maybe they assist them in certain ways and they get the sense of involvement. So in that way, you know, you take care of everything. And they assist, they can assist in all forms of deity worship. They should learn, for example, during the Chandan Yatra time, I don't know, it's always cold here even in summer, except for a rare day when it's sunny. But in Chandan Yatra, do you have Chandan Yatra festivals here? You don't have sandalwood? You don't have. Starting from Akshaya Tritiya in India, traditionally the deities are smeared with sandalwood pulp, because that is the hottest period of the year. And then the whole body of the Lord is smeared like that. And it's a huge festival in Vrindavan. Every temple is gorgeously decorated with flowers and you know, sprays. People will spray things on you as you come in, scented water. And it's like really a festive atmosphere. It's sweltering hot. But all of this makes it very pleasant. And then in every temple, they have these what they call pool bungalows, which means as if they are, you know, marquees or canopies of flowers. So there's a fragrance of flowers everywhere, there's a fragrance of sandalwood, and then they spray the scented water and everybody comes in, there's lots of kirtan and, you know, like that. So then grinding the sandalwood is a big task. So generally people who come in to the temple for darshan and seva, they give him the task, they offer the seva of grinding the sandalwood. So things like that you could get the children to do very easily, even the younger children. Maybe you could have Chandan Yatra at least on some days when it's hot in England. Make them grind the sandalwood. It's expensive though, that's the only issue. And things like that, you can help them, they can help in making garlands for the deities. You know, they can prepare, do other background work to assist. So there's lots of ways children of different ages can partake in devotional service, even in a non-objectionable way. Yes, Hare Krishna. Etiquette.
Yeah,
yes.
Not shouting in front of the deities and things like that. What would you say if there are non-devotees who are working in the school and they don't understand this, and they do shout in front of the deities, then do they get, you know, the aparad, or is it the people who are looking after the deities? How do you deal with that situation?
Well, anyone who offends the deities and allows it to happen, everyone is implicated. But, you know, we should have norms. Any place of worship has rules, right? Suppose you were to go into a church or a mosque or any other place of worship and you started shouting inside, wouldn't somebody object? Isn't it reasonable to expect that in any place of worship there will be some decorum to be maintained? It's natural. So even those who are non-devotees in the school should follow the etiquette. And the solution is that we inform everybody about the standards. And maybe you could have a notice for everybody, devotee, non-devotee, regardless of that. then this is what we should do in the temple hall, this is what we should not do in the temple hall. So even the non-devotees will understand this is a place of worship. And actually it's bad preaching if we just allow anybody to do everything, and they think, then they don't regard that this is any special place, that these are deities, that they can shout, they can do anything they like, behave in any way they like. So it's like, you know, in front of a respectable person even want to speak of the Lord, we immediately moderate our behavior, right? For example, Srila Prabhupada is here. Now we're not going to shout and we're not going to do things because, oh, Prabhupada is here. Even then sometimes we may forget because Prabhupada is in deity form. But if physically somebody else, a very exalted person, was in our presence, would we just shout and do whatever we liked in that person's presence? No. So here Krishna is present personally. So we must institute these norms in our, at least in the temple area of the school, so that everybody understands that this is the standard we want. And immediately it changes the consciousness, because everybody understands, oh yeah, this is, we are in the temple area, the Lord is here, the deities are here. Okay? Any other questions? Yes.
Typically in the schools, the food that is prepared for the kids is cooked in a kitchen where there's always one devotee there, at least. And then they offer the bhoga to the deities.
In the kitchen or in the main temple?
To the deities. So they cook in the kitchen at the school, and then the devotee, whoever is an ISKCON devotee, will offer it to the deities.
In the temple.
But sometimes that devotee is away.
Away?
Yeah. So they're either off-site to another kitchen, or they're off-sick or something like that. So in that situation, what happens is then they either try to find another devotee in the school to offer, or actually that's what always happens, and somehow they have to pull them out of a glass or whatever. And I suppose the question is around whether if a person who's not an ISKCON devotee is trained to follow the etiquette should be allowed to do that service or not.
So your question is that in the case where a devotee is not available to offer the food to the deities, can a non-ISKCON person be trained to offer the food to Krishna? By training, if you mean you train him to become a devotee, when the person becomes a devotee, then he or she can offer it, there's no problem. But if it's just a question of training in the mechanical part of it, you know, place the plate like this and then, you know, then my personal opinion is no, we shouldn't do that. Usually it is known in advance when the devotee in the kitchen will be available and not available.
Sometimes we get called like just 5 minutes before, saying there's no devotee there in the kitchen.
So then